good morning. Welcome to the morning show here on 88.5 KRFY. I'm your host today, Chris Bessler, and we have a great show for you today because we have with us in the studio Shelby Ronstadt. He's our outgoing mayor, and we're going to be talking about his long tenure at the city, over 10 years, right, Shelby?
Well, it depends on how you slice it. 8 years as mayor.
But yeah. You were council before that?
Actually 15 years. Yeah, 12 years.
And then you're on the planning commission?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you are a font of information about our city, and we want to talk about that long tenure you've had there and some of the things that have happened. And then around 8:40, we're going to have a couple other folks in the studio, and we're going to be talking with people from the Bonner Homeless Transitions, Mary Jo Ambrosiani and Rebecca Little, who is the executive director. And they're going to be telling us about some events they have coming up, as well as the need that they're meeting with the Bonner Homeless Transitions. So we have two great interviews coming up for you today. First, though, let's take a look at the weather and kind of gorgeous out there. I saw that when you
came in. Absolutely.
Yeah. We had the sun just kind of peeking up as I came in, coming over the mountains. It's mostly sunny out there right now. There are a few clouds popping around. We're going to see that all day. We'll see increasing clouds tonight. The high today will be 37. Tonight it'll get down to 26. There is a chance of snow tomorrow. It's calling it a 20% chance during the day. Again, temperatures about the same, high of 38, low at 27. On Friday, mostly cloudy. Saturday, partly sunny. Sunday, partly sunny. Kind of hard to tell the difference between mostly cloudy and partly sunny. But that's what we're calling for. So no precipitation those days. High is going to reach close to 40 each of those days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then the lows are going to be, again, in the mid-20s. So pretty nice weather coming up for this week, considering we're only about a week and a day away from the shortest day of the year. Then every day gets longer. But this past week, as the days have been getting shorter, we've lost 9 minutes of daylight. Our official length of day is 8 hours and 27 minutes. I don't know. I didn't get out last night to take a look, but the Geminids meteor shower is supposed to be peaking late tonight, actually. And if the conditions are good, and they might be, we can see maybe 60 meteors an hour. That would be pretty cool to see that if you can get out and take a look up in the sky tonight. As for things going on around town, all kinds of things going on around town. There are a number of Christmas musical events happening. There are, what are some of the major events going on? There's a Christmas escape room that's happening at Thursday and Friday and Saturday, apparently, at the Sandpoint Library. So that would be kind of fun. You ever done an escape room?
I haven't.
So, you know, you go in and then you kind of have to figure out some puzzles in order to escape out of the room.
Hmm.
So it's a test of your logic, I guess. And then there's
fun.
There's an interesting theme coming up on Saturday. This Saturday at the Panada, it's called the Space Point Final Sci-Fest of 2023. It's going to include a talk from some students on SpaceX's Starbase and Starship and their plans to go to Mars. And that's going to be followed by a presentation of The Martian. Pretty great movie if you haven't seen that one. And that's happening at the Panada on Saturday. There's a ton more going on this week, of course. You can see all about what's happening on in our town on our website at krfy.org, and then click on the community calendars tab at the top, or you can go to sandpointonline.com, which provides those calendars. And with that, let's get into our first talk today with Mayor Shelby Ronstadt. Shelby, thanks for being here.
Pleasure to be here, Chris, and good morning to all your listeners.
Well, as we were mentioning, you've been started with the city about 15 years ago. I think, was it on the Planning Zoning Commission, your first?
Yeah.
public foray there?
Yep. Yeah, actually, even before that, I served on the steering committee for the comprehensive plan. And that was the what became the 2009 comprehensive plan, and that started in 2007.
Okay, so you've been on the city, involved the city government one way or another for over 15 years. After serving on the, after first the comp plan, then planning and zoning, you became a council member. Were you appointed to your first one?
Yeah. Originally, I was appointed to fill Marsha Ogilvie's vacant seat when she was elected mayor.
Okay.
Yep. And that was it. So that was completing her term. It was a 2-year term. And then I ran for that seat in the next election.
In 2013. Yeah.
No, actually, it was. Wait, is that right? I think it would have been.
I think
you're right.
2013.
Well, you know better than I do. Okay.
I actually looked it up.
Excuse me.
And then you served most of a term, because then you ran for mayor in 2015.
Yep. Yep. That's right.
So you've had now 2 terms as mayor.
Mm-hmm.
You're closing out your, I guess that would be your 8th year as mayor of Sandpoint.
I'll mention, there's only been 2 2-term mayors in Sandpoint's history.
No
so,
kidding.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to believe, actually, in over 100 years, but
it is kind of hard to believe. But I guess, you know, I want you to tell us about what you feel like your biggest accomplishments were, maybe some of your biggest disappointments. But before that, what got you wanting to serve in local government?
Yeah. Well, that's a great question. You know, I think at the time, back in 2007, 2008, I was getting involved in planning. I was a small business owner. I owned and operated Common Knowledge Bookstore and Cafe. And as I've shared with people who've asked this question in the past, you know, I ended up before the Planning and Zoning Commission on numerous issues, from public art to expanding a business in a residential neighborhood. And ultimately, I just was encouraged by fellow citizens, by mentors of mine, and even by city staff to get more involved in the city. So, I was looking to take on more responsibility and serve, and I was always interested in planning related issues, design. And, kind of happened that way. And then, once you get involved, it's something like a slippery slope, and there's just, there's a vacuum, for leadership there at the city, and we're always in need for people to serve on committees and commissions, let alone council and beyond. So, I think, you know, once you get involved and you start to learn, then you become more valuable to the organization and you feel even more called to serve and help make the organization as successful as it can be.
Mm-hmm. Well, hopefully that happens to a lot of other people, because we do need people that will step up to help and lead the city in that way. And of course, the planning commission is an unpaid position. That's strictly volunteer. The council makes a small stipend, I think.
Yeah, that's right. But basically, it's enough to cover health insurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the mayor's position really is modeled as a half-time or less, right? And just based on what the pay is. Because the pay, I think, is $25,000 a year is the number that's
I think it's 18. Well, it's going up now.
It will be going up.
But yeah, I think it was 18. It's currently 18.
Okay. Hey, you're a bargain, man.
Yeah.
Yes. So
we don't do it for the money.
Yeah, exactly. Let's take a look back. What do you consider your biggest accomplishment? I know some pretty big things did happen during your term.
Yeah, it's hard to pick one. I'm sitting here last night. I'm laying in bed, you know, kind of thinking about this morning, and I made a list of bullet points that I wanted to mention, and I've got probably 25 things here in front of me that could be on that list, and it is hard to pick one. But you know, if I were to, I guess, step back at, you know, 50,000 feet kind of thing, I think just the overall approach that the city has taken these last 8 years was a really big transition from how we've operated in the past. And that is to really operate as a professional organization with a strategic vision. And that was something that was wholly missing before. When I came in 2000, beginning of 2016, the city, you know, we had great staff at the time, but the way that we talk about it is really all the departments were siloed and not coordinating together very well. So structurally, there were some problems that created limitations for the city, and there was no continuity from one elected mayor and council to the next. And so, and there was no strategic vision. So competing priorities, you know, it kind of came down to, you know, which way the wind was blowing as to what priorities rose to the surface, what got funded in you know, what projects and what department, that kind of thing. And so coming in 2016, one of the first things that we did is create a strategic plan, which was the first in the city's history. And that really gave us a clear strategic vision driven by the mayor and envisioned by the council to really set the sights on where we're going and how we're going to get there. And it really allowed all of those competing priorities to fall in line and filter out which is the most important in terms of an alignment with the strategic vision and with the support of the council. And it really helped us, you know, think strategically long-term and plan accordingly to ensure that we're making the best use of our limited resources. And so not very exciting, maybe, but...
Well, as part of that, the city, I'm not sure what year it was, but brought on a city administrator position.
Yeah, actually, so you're right, that was part of it. And that actually, so Jennifer Stapleton, our first city administrator, started literally 3 days before I did. She started, she started on the 1st and I started on the 3rd, something like that. Excuse me, I'm still recovering from a flu last week. So, you know, that was part of it. You know, I mentioned professionalism, a professional staff, and that city administrator position has been crucial for us as a city to be able to maintain that continuity from elected body to elected body, and also bring, you know, organize at the department head level our leadership team to make sure that that we're essentially, you know, keeping our priorities straight and that we have coherent and cohesive leadership at the top. And I think that position, and Jennifer in particular, has enabled us to pull together, I think, a fantastic leadership team over the last 8 years and accomplish far, far more than we could have otherwise. Mm-hmm.
And actually, the city administrator position became a campaign issue this year for the mayor's office. And our incoming mayor, Jeremy Graham, he's been indicating he wants to get rid of that position and go back to a system that vests more authority and, I guess, autonomy in department heads. What is your take on that? And do you think that's likely to happen once he's in there and has the reality of the running the city in front of him?
Yeah, great question. I'll pick up the first part of that first. I think that would be tragic, actually. And I'm not sure what he means in terms of, I have heard some of that rhetoric on the campaign trail, and I'm not sure what he means in terms of create more autonomy for department heads. Department heads do have a lot of autonomy within their department. They are the kings and queens of their fiefdom, but what we do have now is better coordination and better support for that leadership team with the city administrator position. So I think that would be a tragedy, actually, if that position were to be eliminated. I think that's one of the achievements that we've had in the last 8 years that's allowed the city to be exceptionally successful and accomplish far more than I'm sure it would have otherwise. And then that continuity from elected body to elected body is critical. To whether or not the new mayor is going to be able to achieve that is up to be determined. I know that of the existing council members, four will remain, and I know they're in support of the administrator position. It would take a vote of the majority of the council plus the mayor to eliminate that position, or a unanimous council without the mayor's support to eliminate that position. So we'll see. I guess time will tell on that, but I think it would be two steps back for the city if that were to occur.
Just in terms of handling the nuts and bolts of daily operations.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it would really rock the boat just across the whole leadership team and across the city staff in administration generally. I think you'd see quite a bit of fallout there, and I'm not sure, that would be a challenge for the city to recover from that. It would set us back for some time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you count the professional organization of the city as one of your accomplishments. Tell us some more. You got a list, you said, of 20 things that are worth remarking on, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think in terms of infrastructure, there's been some really significant things. We've created a dark fiber backbone. This was early on. I want to say it was 2017 or 18. The years kind of run together after a while, Chris. But it comes with all these gray hairs, you know. Excuse me.
Yeah, you're not kind of lacking in that department compared to some of us.
But really, that brought Ting to town and created a more competitive environment for high-speed fiber. And I think we're going to continue to see more of that. Hopefully, we're going to try and get that distributed through downtown core as well. That's always been part of the vision. But that's been, a big need of the city for a long time. And accomplishing that in the early years of this administration was really a huge win. And along those lines, really upgrading City Hall to it's more of a modern City Hall with not just, looks nice and all that, but the way customer service operates there is really pretty slick, and it's sort of the gold standard of how City Halls operate. If you go city to city, you'll recognize that. Police was upgraded with that as well, and so there have been significant safety improvements in the police department. Including, take-home squad cars, which was really huge for our police department to be able to, for their own safety and just for the ease of transition in their shifts, to be able to take their cars home and bring them to work. That was a huge win for the department.
There wasn't a policy earlier.
Correct. No? Yeah. And then also just the IT improvements have been huge. We're much more secure in terms of IT security now than we ever have been. And in terms of backups throughout City Hall, we've got a transfer switch we've been waiting for, gosh, I don't even know. It's been like over a year. We've been waiting for a transfer switch that arrives, I think on Monday, that's going to be installed at City Hall, so that if we did have a significant power outage, that we've got state-of-the-art generator that'll keep things operating smoothly at City Hall there. And then all of the upgrades that came with COVID and a lot of those COVID dollars that enabled civic engagement to improve public access and for anyone wanting to participate at meetings at City Hall and whatnot. Those have all been huge improvements. And then also on the infrastructure side, wastewater has always been an issue here at the city. It's amazing that we have a wastewater treatment plant that's decades beyond its useful life, really. And it's kind of one of those things that's been, the can's been kicked down the road for so many years that, and this administration has taken that on, and we've We've done what we call bridge improvements over the last several years. We've made substantial investments into the wastewater treatment facility to get us to start rebuilding the plant piece by piece, and get us ultimately a new wastewater treatment plant. And that's going to continue next year. We're going to continue with the design engineering for that new plant to go through the final phases of complete transformation, which will be a massive public investment for this community. But really just moving that ball down the field, and it's been ignored for far too long. So, and then of course, downtown streets, more continuing on the theme of infrastructure. We completed there's one more phase. Phase three is yet to come, and we'll begin the design engineering for phase three. That's actually this next council meeting that's going out to bid for that contract. But that'll be the final phase for the completion of the revitalization of downtown streets, which has been underway really since Urban Renewal was created back in 2005. That was the original intention of that Urban Renewal Agency, the downtown agency. The roundabout out at the airport, another Urban Renewal project. With the art out there at Schweitzer Cutoff.
How about the streets downtown where they were widened right in the downtown core? We have the wider streets now, the wider sidewalks and the different parking scheme. That was a big change, and I think that took place during your watch. Is that correct?
Yeah. And maybe I wasn't clear. That's what I was just referring to.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, downtown streets. So it started with So during this administration, we did first in Cedar, and then improved the parking there. Went to diagonal parking went down to two lanes downtown, and then there's the gray water treatment that's part of that as well. So it's significantly improving the stormwater treatment to protect water quality entering the Pondere system there from downtown. So, and then of course it's just like as you mentioned, wider sidewalks, much more inviting downtown ambiance there. So
I'll say that there's some folks that love it, and the fact that it by design it forces people to slow down the way the downtown's been configured now. But there are some people that complain that, hey, it takes too long to get through downtown. But as I understand the design of the downtown, the idea was to make it more walking friendly, pedestrian friendly.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think you hit it right on the head. It really is. It actually performs better than I was expecting. One thing that we were concerned about is bike traffic through downtown. I ride my bike downtown all the time, and I love it as a bicyclist. It's wonderful how slow the traffic moves on First Avenue. It really feels pretty safe on a bicycle. So that's I think is a huge win. One thing, it'd be great if there was one thing that I would like to see changed going forward. I think it would be even safer and operate much more smoothly if we went to diagonal back-end parking on First. In fact, throughout the downtown core, I think would be huge. And that's probably the single greatest change that you can make to improve safety, not just for bicyclists, but really for drivers as well. And
so when they pull out their nose out and they can see better.
Yeah. It's better visibility both for the parker and the oncoming traffic. And then you're moving with the traffic, not against it. And then of course, if you're moving stuff in and out of the car, you're doing it on the sidewalk side, not out on the street side. Mm-hmm. It's just all around. I mean, there's a list of all the reasons why back in is a safer way to park. Mm-hmm. And then obviously for a bicyclist, it's you have that eye-to-eye contact with the person pulling out, and again, you're moving with traffic, not backing into it. So, anyway, that was, maybe that's something that can, the next mayor can take on. I know he's a planner.
That's right. Jeremy Grimm is a former city planner.
Uh-huh. Excuse me.
One of the things I think would fall under infrastructure, or you could say recreation, was the improvements to Memorial Field.
Yeah.
That occurred. That was the result of a local option tax, the 1% local option tax that was passed in 2015. The money from that, the extra penny that people paid for purchases in the town and within city limits were dedicated to Memorial Field, specifically replacing the grandstands, which actually were, I think you could say they were at the end of their useful life. They were even possibly going to be condemned.
Yeah.
So you were here for that entire construction period. I think as a council person, you favored, supported the local option tax.
Absolutely.
What was that like bringing those improvements to Memorial Field?
Yeah, that was huge. And I'm glad you mentioned that. And that's also, you know, in alignment with infrastructure. Parks and recreation, open space, those are quality of life related issues that were a huge priority of this administration. And, I think the city did so well for voters to approve that 1% local option tax. And Memorial Field has just been, a real gift to the community. One thing that there was a lot of debate around, grass versus turf. And I know you fell on the other side of that debate, Chris.
I was on the grass side, personally, yeah.
You know, and I was, too, all along. And the thing that convinced me to come over to the turf side is how much more playability we get with the turf. And that was a deciding factor. I think, in a town, a northern town, where we really only get about 4, maybe 5 months of playability, if we're lucky.
On the grass turf.
On the grass turf, yeah. Thank you.
Because of the seasons and the rain and snow that come, for a big chunk of time, Memorial Field wasn't playable.
Yeah. Exactly. And, on a day like today, or a lot of days, even in the winter, when, maybe it's sunny outside and the snow's melted or whatever, you can see kids out there playing on the turf, on days like this, so throughout the winter. So just the amount of playability. And then kids get out there, teams get out there at least a month early for practices and whatnot, and they stay out there a month longer into the fall. So, and then the other thing is you can just go back to back to back. The grass needs to rest in order to grow and continue to be, quality turf. Quality surface, but that turf you can just play back to back to back, and there's no rest period required. So, we actually get several times the amount of playability out of that, and it's a much better investment for the community. And honestly, as a soccer player, it's really fun to play on too. So I think that was a huge win for the community,
it did impact the Festival at Sandpoint. Was one of the impacts there. How do you feel it's done for the festival? There were concerns that it would be way too warm because it in the summer does retain more heat on the artificial surface. And then the other impact there is that the fees for the festival went up because of the protections, I think, that are required for the field. What feedback do you have there, or response do you have to the impact on the festival?
Yeah, well, I hear that argument, and I think because the festival happens in the evening, I think those concerns are, the heat is not really a factor because they're evening events.
Being on the field for those shows, it is decent. It's decently tolerable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Temperatures. Yeah.
Yeah, and most of those shows are starting, around sundown, and so that works out. If those shows were at 2 in the afternoon, might be more of an issue. So that's one factor. And then, as far as the additional cost, understandable. I think there is a cost to this, and while we were able to pay for most of the capital costs through the tax, there is ongoing maintenance issues and precautions that need to be taken to protect that surface from load impacts like the tent and whatnot. So it's cost of doing business, but I think all in all, it was money well spent and a good move by the city, given all the way that it keeps paying back, you know, year after year.
With the performance for the athletic teams.
Yeah.
Okay, well, what? Take another 5 minutes and tell us some more things that you feel like were good accomplishments in your term.
Yeah, I think in 2000, as part of the strategic plan, and what resulted was the most comprehensive master planning effort the city's ever undertaken. We had over a dozen master plans that followed everything from capital improvement plans to the comprehensive land use plan that is just being finalized right now. Arts and Culture Master Plan, which was the first in the city's history, and many others, a multimodal master plan. So there were many master plans that followed that really ensured that the city was thoughtful about how it, how it invested its limited resources and prioritized its investments into the future. And that really was, I think, the right move to make sure that we head into this growth period, which the city's been experiencing for the last number of years, and we have every reason to believe that that's going to continue in the future, that we're well prepared to manage and handle this growth that is impending. So I think that was huge for the city. We've made, you mentioned the sports complex, or rather Memorial Field, but we've also made a major investment in an indoor sports complex at Travers, which is something that this community has aspired for decades. And then the watershed recreation master plan was something that was a vision of mine back when I came onto council in 2013. So seeing that come to fruition really just in the last year has really been, something that has made me really proud for the city. So happy to see the work that Pondere Peddlers have continued to do up in the watershed to, in partnership with the city, to improve recreational trails up in that area. It just gets better and better. And I see that continuing into the future, and we're going to continue to have just developed an incredible trail system and recreational network up there that at the same time respects and protects water quality into perpetuity. So that was really huge, I think, a big win for the city. And then, let's see.
I want to circle back on
go ahead.
On the James Russell Sports Center, because that was a flashpoint, and mm-hmm. most recently. And it wasn't that people were opposed to the building of the center, which is generously being paid for by a $7.5 million donation by the James Russell family, but the location became a matter of contention. Actually, we had protests on that. What would you say to the folks that were upset about the location and the fact that some trees were removed for that?
Yeah, well, I understand the concern, and when we're facing growth and increasingly limited space and limited resources, we knew that an indoor sports facility was a top priority for this community for many, many years. Before I got here, there was already committee groups and city groups that were getting together, trying to figure out how we could get a facility like that here, and then we had done multiple surveys over the years that confirmed our assumption there, but we don't have unlimited land resources here, and we don't have unlimited funding, and so. We were constrained with, we have what we have, and we knew that there was going to be impacts locating it anywhere that we choose to locate it. There's going to be impacts, and so I think the council made the best decision that it could with what we have, and nobody likes to see trees go, and nobody likes to give up open space, but. We knew it had to go somewhere, and that was the space that that made the most sense for the most number of reasons.
Okay. Well, Shelby, there's more on your list, I know, of things that, that got accomplished during your term. But what would you say to your supporters that put you in office for two terms, three if you count the council? Are there any words you'd like to express?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. I just want to thank citizens for giving me this privilege and opportunity to serve over the last 12 years as an elected official, and it has truly been an honor. I hope I've done right by you, and I think I have a lot of trust and faith in city staff. I'm very grateful to city staff for all the hard work that they have done and continue to do each and every day. We have such a fantastic team at the city. We're really blessed to have the level of professionalism and expertise that we have at the city. And I hope that is recognized and appreciated and respected. And it's been an honor to serve with multiple councils that I have over the years. With everybody, you know, people complain about government, and I used to be one of those people that complain about government. And when you get involved, you realize that, and you pull back the curtain, you realize that it's really not a conspiracy.
And it really is people that are just trying to do their best.
That's right. Everybody is there for the right reasons. They're trying to do the best for their community, and they really care. And we all have different perspectives, and that's as it should be. But it really has been an honor to work with all of those wonderful people. And this council in particular has really been a pleasure to work with. I appreciate the opportunity to serve, and it has truly been an honor.
Mm-hmm. Shelby, what's next for you in just the minute or two we have left? You're not moving from Sandpoint, I take it. You're dug in here.
I'm dug in, yep. And, you know, even if the future does take us elsewhere, we're always going to maintain a presence here. And we absolutely love Sandpoint. I love Sandpoint. I've been here for 25 years. And so moving forward, I started a company, Watershed Equity, and listeners may be familiar with the Qualified Opportunity Zone. I manage a fund called Watershed Opportunity Fund, and the purpose of which is to invest in communities like Sandpoint and do what we can to solve community problems like workforce housing, for instance, which has been identified as a huge need, not just in this community, but all over the country. And the Opportunity Zone is a way to to build housing that's more affordable, leveraging the tax advantages of the Qualified Opportunity Zone. So that's where I'm focused in the near future, and excited to continue to have a positive impact on my community and other communities that we serve in the future.
And that actually ends up being a good segue to talk about affordable housing, because we're going to be talking with two folks from the Bonner Homeless Transitions in just a moment. But I want to say, Shelby Ronstadt, our outgoing mayor, hey, thanks for, you know, 15 years in the trenches helping lead the city. And thanks for coming in to speak today as well.
Thank you, Chris. It's always been a pleasure to sit here with you and discuss issues with the city, and I hope it's not the last. Maybe next time you can pull me in as a as a member at large who's criticizing the administration. That would be fun.
Well, you'll have that opportunity. We all will. It's kind of the name of the nature of the game, isn't it?
That's right.
Well, thanks a lot, Shelby. And folks, you are listening to 88.5 KRFY. This is the morning show. We're going to be talking with Rebecca Little and Mary Jo Ambrosiani with the Bonner Homeless Transition in just a minute. But before they get in here, here's a song called A Little Jack Frost Get Lost. It's with Peggy Lee and Bing Crosby. We'll be back in just a moment.
All little Jack Frost get lost, get lost.
Little Jack Frost get lost.
You know you don't do a thing but put the bite on my toes.
Freeze up the ground and take the bloom from the rose.
Oh, little Jack Frost, go away, go away. Don't you come back another day.
There's lots of cold feet, all the lovers complain. You turned off the heat down in Lover's Lane.
The bench in the park is all alone in the dark. So little Jack Frost, get lost, get lost.
Little Jack Frost, get lost. So little Jack Frost, get lost. Get lost, little Jack Frost. Get lost, get lost.
You don't do a thing but put the bite on my toes.
Freeze up the ground and take the bloom from the rose.
So little Jack Frost, go away, go away. And don't you come back another day. Get gone, go away.
There's lots of cold feet, all the lovers complain. You turned off the heat down in Lover's Lane.
The bench in the park is all alone in the dark. So little Jack Frost, get lost, get lost.
Little Jack Frost, get lost. Get lost, get lost, get lost, get lost.
LJ Frost, get lost.
Lost.
And that was Bing Crosby singing there, along with Peggy Lee, Little Jack Frost Get Lost. You are listening to The Morning Show here on KRFY. And we now have in the studio with us Mary Jo Ambrosiani. And Mary Jo, you are the president of the Bonner Homeless Transitions.
Yes, I am.
And Rebecca Little. Rebecca, you are the executive director. Am I correct?
Correct.
Okay. I got to try a different microphone for you. Okay. There we go. Try that. Say
yes.
Hi.
Okay. Hi.
Okay. All right. Well, Rebecca and Mary Jo, thanks for coming in. And I know you do have it's a program coming up that you want to tell people about. But first, tell us a little bit about what Bonner Homeless Transitions does.
So Bonner Homeless Transitions provides transitional housing for families and single women and single women with children. We have two facilities. Blue Haven South is over on the corner of Michigan and Florence. And then last year, we were given the opportunity to lease the Kinderhaven building. And so we have that building as well.
Mm-hmm. And so you're actually filling a role that Kinderhaven did for many years.
And ours is
a little different way.
A little different because Kinderhaven was children. And I believe at one point, teens. And we are addressing women with children or single women and families.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit different.
Mm-hmm. And you do have a fundraiser coming up. It's called Avenues of Hope.
Yes.
I want to learn more about that. But before we get into that, what can you kind of tell us the picture of the situation for homeless people in Sandpoint? You know, in the cities, we see homeless people on the street, and there are big homeless camps.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in our community, it's less visible to people. And maybe it's easier for people to remember that that we have some folks that are really struggling just to have a home.
We do. And Rebecca can address that. It's called the hidden homeless.
Yeah, the invisible hidden homeless. And it's not like what you think about like on the Seattle streets or in Portland or San Francisco.
Spokane.
Or Spokane, yeah. These, they're couch surfing. They are in a domestic violence situation and wanting to leave, but don't have anywhere to go. So the great thing about our program is the families, the single women, the moms with children, or even single dads with children, they can come to us with absolutely nothing, just the clothes on their back. And thanks to our donors, we're able to provide clothing, and we work very closely with the food bank, and we're able to provide food. All the rooms are furnished, the apartments are furnished, and so we can just get them in and get them started. One of the big requirements is drug and alcohol free. and they are required to work within 15 days. So, you know, it gives them 2 weeks to get on their feet.
Is there a situation you could tell us about, you know, a family or individual that came in and what their situation was that you were able to provide some help with?
Yeah. So, like right now we have a family that came to us that had been living under the bridge this summer and kind of couch surfing and in garages or a shed. And they called us, we interviewed them, they came in, we felt like it was a good fit for our program and it was a good fit for them. And, you know, in this family, they were working, they just didn't have the money for housing, you know. With rent cost and salaries here, it doesn't really equal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's tough for people that have full-time jobs or even two or three jobs in some cases.
Right. Yes.
Just to meet the housing cost.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be on low-income housing, I mean, you can be on that list for 2 or 3 years. So what do you do in the meantime? Mm-hmm. And our program's 24 months, so they can be with us for 24 months. And we don't have rent, or we don't charge rent. We do charge program fees, so, and it's very minimal.
Mm-hmm. But they have to contribute something.
Yes, and we provide budgeting classes. We have case management. We provide biweekly group counseling, and it's just to empower them to keep going.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, tell us about the Avenues of Hope fundraiser that you're in the midst of, I think.
So the Avenues for Hope fundraiser is sponsored by the Idaho Housing and Finance down in Boise, IHFA. And we are in our 13th year of being a part of the program. And it began yesterday, December 12th, and runs through the end of the month. And it's an online fundraising opportunity. So people would go to our website, bonnerhomelesstransitions.org, or they could go to Avenues for Hope and put in Bonner County Homeless Task Force or Bonner Homeless Transitions, and that will take them to our site. And the minimum donation is $25, but people can give what they would like to afford. And throughout this campaign, then, all the money raised will come back to us to support us in our programs so that we can help the families and the women and children that we have in our program. And throughout the campaign, Idaho Housing sponsors different types of games to where you can win prizes. And so we get a lot of our match money there. And so yesterday was the early bird game. And if we had 12 donors that contributed the minimum of $25, we got an extra $500, which we qualified for and won. So
We're
well on our way for that. And then...
So basically, if you got in $300 worth of donations, you got an additional $500.
Correct.
Well, that sounds like a pretty good game.
And for the first $2,500 that we raise, Idaho Housing matches that $2,500. So there's ample opportunity for us to build on the normal donations that people will contribute towards our organization.
Mm-hmm. How do you typically get those kinds of donations? Is it people just going to the website and donating, or is it coming from other organizations in town? How does money get raised for Bonner Homeless
Transitions? It's from a variety of people. We have a list of donors that have been to our Little Black Dress events that we've held the last few years, as well as previous donors to Avenues for Hope. So we send out a letter. We have a little Christmas letter and a flyer that we sent to all of our donors telling them of when the fundraising is occurring and how they can go online and contribute, or they can mail in a check to our address and we will put that towards our campaign as well.
Mm-hmm. And you can get your go ahead and give us the address.
The address is P.O. Box 1696 in Sandpoint, and they can just address it to Bonner Homeless Transitions.
Okay. Box 1696.
1696, yes.
In Sandpoint. So if you want to contribute by check, you can do that. But I presume you can take donations online?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, they prefer that you do it online. Mm-hmm. It's just a lot quicker. And
It helps you with accounting.
It does. Too.
You just
it does,
see all
yes.
The donations
yes.
as they line up.
Correct.
Okay. So how did you get connected to Avenues of Hope? Have you done this before for Bonner Homeless Transitions?
So this is our 13th year. So it's just something that when we received federal funding prior to 2018, Idaho Housing would always keep us apprised of campaigns and fundraising efforts that they were sponsoring. And so once we were informed of this campaign, we've just continued to participate in it over the years. Mm-hmm. And it has really helped us raise the much needed money for our budget to run now both of our facilities.
Mm-hmm. I know your organization used to be called the Bonner County Homeless Task Force, I think.
That's our 501c3 designation.
Okay.
So to be a charitable organization, that is how we initially filed for our 501c3 certification. Mm-hmm. And many people, we understood, found it difficult to understand what it was that we actually do. So we do business as Bonner Homeless Transitions, and it just seems to explain or be understood by people a little bit better about what it is that we do. Mm-hmm. So our mission is helping homeless families and individuals achieve self-sufficiency and increase the quality of their lives. Mm-hmm. And we just felt that the Bonner Homeless Transitions tagline explained that a little bit clearer mm-hmm. than it's the longer
in, yeah, the help version. You provide is intended to be transitional, to help people in a current problem get past that
yes.
and get into a better housing situation.
Yes, yes. And so within that 24-month period that we are working with them, when their time is within like 6 months, we help them to look at the various low-income housing opportunities that are available here, because many times they have to fill out an application, get on the waiting list, and wait for that opportunity to open up. So we do help them with that next phase as best that we can.
You know, I know there's a lot of housing that's being built right now in Bonner County. Is some of that dedicated for low-income housing?
My understanding, it is. Mm-hmm. But as you know, it takes a long time for that to be completed from start to finish. Mm-hmm. But I believe there are some low-income houses that are being built. To my understanding, the Culver's housing development is specifically designed for that next phase.
Right.
Of
right.
Yeah. Renters.
It's a mix, actually. I think it's some market value homes and some homes that are going to mm-hmm. have some form of assistance to help people get into those.
Right.
Into permanent homes. Rebecca, how long have you been involved with Bonner Homeless Transitions?
So I'm very new. I just started the beginning of July.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so my background is special ed. We actually moved over here in 2020 with my husband's job, but I worked in the Auburn School District and with special needs for over 10 years. And I've just always had a desire to help people that, you know, the unfortunate situations. And before that, I was an office manager for United Way. So it's a nonprofit that also is kind of the hub for all the nonprofits, and they help provide or link people with different agencies that mm-hmm. can provide for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in larger metro areas, they have a pretty big mm-hmm. Footprint. Not so much here. I don't hear much about United Way here in Sandpoint. Mary Jo, you might know this better than I do.
I think it's mostly either Spokane or Coeur d'Alene where United mm-hmm. Way would be more prominent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we only have a couple minutes. Do you want to tell us anything more about either the Avenues of Hope or fundraiser that you have going right now or Bonner Homeless Transitions?
I think for Bonner Homeless Transitions, I mean, we do have our fundraiser going on right now, and we'll have our Little Black Dress fundraiser. But if you go to the website, you can donate at any time. There's a little
Correct.
Button that says donate. You just mm-hmm. click on that, and it's pretty self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. And like Mary Jo said, we solely rely off donations and fundraising. So You know, every little bit helps to support our families getting to self-sufficiency, which is the ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a role for volunteers? Do you look for volunteers to help with things?
We do.
Yeah.
We do. We're always looking for volunteers, like every other 501c3 in Sandpoint.
Yeah.
There's no shortage of volunteer opportunities.
Exactly.
Exactly. And to learn more about that, I assume they can go to their website.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And just one last little tidbit here. So a couple of the other opportunities that we have to get match money, one of the prizes is for an opportunity. It's called Weekend Warriors. So if we can get 12 people to give a $25 donation between 12:01 Saturday morning until 11:59 Sunday evening, 12 new donors or repeating donors would help us with that. And then we also have a program called the Domestic Dozen, where if we get 12 states to contribute to us, they would give us an extra $250. So again, it's just match money that if we work or can rely on the help of our donors and residents, they can help us.
So prime time really would be this Saturday.
This Saturday.
Or Sunday.
Yes.
If you could be one of the 12, that'll help secure an extra
chunk
of money for you. Okay, so folks, that's when you want to go do it, on Saturday or Sunday.
And I think there's two weekend opportunities.
Two weekend opportunities.
And so once we meet that match is done. So we'd have to work on the next one.
Okay. Can they get details on this on the website or Facebook?
Yes,
Facebook and the website.
Okay.
Yep.
And there's a link to Facebook from the website, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, that's BonnerHomelessTransitions.org.
Yeah. Yes.
Well, Mary Jo Ambrosiani and Rebecca Little, thank you for coming in to tell us more about Bonner Homeless Transitions. And I hope some of our listeners will queue up and help with Avenues of Hope.
Great. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you,
Chris,
for having us.
Thanks. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Okay. And that's going to wrap up our show for the day, folks. We're going to go out with a song by Judy Collins, Joy to the World. It's a seasonal piece. And I thank you for listening today. And I don't have in front of me the playlist for what's coming up tomorrow on the morning show, but Jack and Jim will be in here. And you can, of course, listen also on Friday for our show, News of the Week. Thanks for listening today and have a great week.
KRFY Ponderé.
This is Bird Note. For birds and other animals with good natural insulation, winter provides a striking benefit as they scavenge. Bacteria function very slowly or not at all in the cold, preventing dead bodies from rotting in sub-freezing temperatures. By way of contrast, in tropical Africa, when an animal dies, bacteria quickly attack the body, and convert it to a smelly, toxic mess, unsuitable as food for most organisms. Vultures patrol the savanna skies, using their excellent sense of smell to find carcasses before bacteria render them inedible. But in northern latitudes, ravens and